Again on this Saturday live, if you're hearing me live, Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. Central Time. And the rest of the times, it depends on where you live in the world, not just here in America, but across the globe. By the way, you know, we have people who've called us from Australia, and they're going through their problems right now, a lockdown, a dictatorship of great proportions over the COVID nonsense and other things as well. ADLism and the like. And we have people listening in Europe, and the people call us from Sweden and even from England, and we've had quite a few. We've had Canada. I wonder if there's anybody listening from Iceland. Is there anyone there, an Icelander, who would ever call the program, listens, and maybe disagrees or doesn't agree perfectly with us, but that doesn't matter. I'd like to hear from somebody from Iceland, because Iceland is a very special place in the diaspora of the tribes of Israel, the dispersal of the tribes of Israel, and for various reasons. But they certainly represent particularly the tribe of Benjamin, and the Apostle Paul was a Benjamite, as we know. And I'm just curious, if you are listening, you can drop me a line, too. You can just send me an email at rick458@cox.net. Well, I'd like to say happy birthday to Yeshua Messiah this week, because the actual date that the scholars of Scripture have told us that Jesus was actually born was in September the 29th, September 29th. So we just have a couple of days or so away, and that is the actual date when Jesus was born. You know, there were shepherds and flocks in the fields, and I know that doesn't happen in wintertime in December. And it is explainable. It is explained through the Scriptures. So get into the Scriptures. If you need a link, I have a nice link that explains the birth of Christ. If you need to, you can also write to me at the same email, rick458, R-I-C-K, 458, at cox.net. We do have the Facebook page up, anticipating the new changes that have been advertised for a couple of months. And already, you know, there have been physical, cosmetic changes, but we're looking to see what aces Mr. Zuckerberg has up his sleeve, and there's going to be some changes, undoubtedly. And we're using this as a means to an end in these times. As long as it's available, why not use it? I don't use Twitter. I really don't. I don't use anything else anymore. I used to, but I really don't. And we do have the chat room, of course, as you know, deadlyexperiment.chatango.com. And that's it. We are on our local public access television program, still being aired, all reruns. We're continuing to air them. And that's good. We're getting out and here on the program. So that's it. Those three venues, basically. That's what we do. Today I'm going to have a special program. You know, I like to lay aside a lot of this waste of time nonsense prognosticating elections, talking about Trump versus deep state, Trump versus the Democrats versus the Republicans, the Democrats and the Republicans versus deep state versus you. It's all hokum pokum, folks. I keep trying to tell people that. And I think, believe it or not, it's finally starting to register. I said, and I've told this to many people recently, why are you so preoccupied with who will be named if, in fact, an election does take place? I guess it's November 3rd. And if it takes place, who will be president or who will be named as president? You know, presidents don't make decisions. The last time we had one make a decision, he was shot up. He was killed. A decision cost him his life in favor of America and against that synagogue of Satan, which we always denounce as Jesus did. So I think we ought to look at the greater picture. And today we're going to do that, by the way. I have a special from a friend of mine, well, a friend of ours, actually, on BitChute. And he has quite a prolific exercise here in history. Very important that we know who we are and that God predicted this land of America. That's right, not just in the New Covenant, but in the Old Covenant as well. And so take the red pill on BitChute. Has some good stuff up there. And stuff that people have overlooked, I think, including myself. I haven't had time to bring it up. But we talk about the Rothschild regime taking over this country, supplanting the supplanters, Jacob's seed. And yet, we haven't gone through all of their affiliations and all of their hand-me-downs and all of their peoples and races and groups of family names that have been used to, in effect, bring about change in America. Yeah. Now, God brings about the good changes, and we know who's bringing about the bad. But, you know, the supplanters, Jacob, who would supplant Esau here in America, where Esau and Rush and Russia would be driven way up north to the coldest climates in the Soviet gulag. Here America would be the land, what, between two great rivers, as it says in the book of Isaiah. Get to know me and get to know my word. Isaiah 14, Isaiah 18. And in 14, you know, in the first verse, it says, for the Lord will have mercy on Jacob, and will yet choose true Israel and set them in their own land. You know what land that is? Take a guess. And the strangers shall be joined on with them, and they shall cleave to the house of Jacob. That's all the tribes, the 10 tribes in particular, here today in America. A land between two great rivers, a land of unwalled cities. This is all before Trump. This is all before building the wall. This is the land that God calls the new Israel. And you can read it mainly in Isaiah chapter 18 and 14. And in Jeremiah, you can read it in many places that he has a place. This is going back several thousands of years where he would appoint a place of destiny for his people. As they came out of Assyrian captivity, they would go through, cut across up the mountains of the Caucasus, and they would go to Europe, and they would settle there, and then they would move onward and go to Canada, and they would come here to the United States, and this would be known as that land, the New Jerusalem in this age, okay? Not the New Jerusalem that will come, when that will be in the time of the millennium, and eternity, but the new physical Jerusalem in this earth age. I think that's an amazing, amazing thing. And it's so amazing that I picked a few clips today, a couple of musical clips, one which will dovetail very nicely with the special that we are going to hear about the Harriman family. Who are the Harrimans? You've heard of Averell Harriman. You've heard of the Rothschilds. You've heard of the various communists and socialist groups here in America. You've heard of them, the Schiff brothers. They financed the North against the South against the North in the so-called Civil War. Well, the Harrimans had a role, too. The railroads and the expansion westward. So you know what that tells me? That tells me something very interesting, because I always wanted to bring this forth on this program. Not just the influence in the constitutional days and the heydays of America's founding and how they supplanted America's political process in the 18th century and the 19th century, particularly, but also how they led the expansion westward. So you know what that tells me? It tells me that wherever Little Red Riding Hood goes, there follows the Big Bad Wolf. That's the way I like to think of it, folks, the Big Bad Wolf. And it's true. It's true that wherever the good go, the bad follow shortly. They follow exactly upon your footsteps. They came to America right from the get-go. There was always that Kenite, always that child of Cain, always working, always within and without to bring about their goal, their father's will. And unfortunately, too many of Jacob's seed, the seed line of Adam, the seed line of the Adamic races and of Isaac, would not do the same for their father. Unfortunately, they would disobey. They would get caught up in all kinds of things, racial mixing and so on and so forth. These are the things he said you don't do. You stand apart. You stand separate. You build a nation for me, not for you, but for me. So, you know, before I get into the special video audio presentation on the Harrimans, I think you're going to find this to be very, very informative. I want to play for you. I don't know how many of you do remember, but I was young at the time, very young. It was called the Cinerama process in theaters. There were only a handful in the United States in the early 60s. It actually began in the 1950s, following the heyday of early television, because the motion picture industry went from a $4 billion annual industry down to a $1 billion annual industry with the advent of television in the 1946 and 7 era. And so the theaters were obviously looking to get people to come back. So they had 3D, and they had, oh my goodness, they had all kinds of inventions. The Cinerama was, of course, probably the most noted and prolific of all of them, and a whole host of other inventions. And, of course, Technicolor was being used then to draw people back from black and white television to the theaters. So, with that in mind, the Cinerama theaters and the Cinerama chains, in association with MGM at the time, 1962, created a movie called How the West Was Won. And you probably, many of you old-timers, remember it. How the West Was Won. Alfred Newman's score, a cast of characters, I think there were like 200 or 300 Hollywood stars in it, from James Stewart to Agnes Moorehead, Walter Brennan, and Carl Malden, and a whole host of others. They all had their little roles, you know, Lee J. Cobb, so forth. And it was quite a prolific film. And I remember seeing it, and you couldn't see it if you went there because it was taking up virtually half the theater, the screens. In those days, originally, it was a nightmare because you had to have 3 35-millimeter projectors, each focusing, each in perfect synchrony, projecting on the screen, one to the left panel, one to the middle, and one to the right. And so it became a nightmare. If one frame was missing, then it would be out of sync. And sometimes that happened. So then they abolished that three-projector, three-lens system and went to an ultra 70-millimeter projection system that obviously shortened or you know, actually reduced the size and width of the screen. But it was an incredible invention at the time, the Cinerama process. This movie, How the West Was Won, How the West Was Won, in the very last part of the movie, let's see if we can bring it up in a moment, Ken. This one here is a movie which, the song of which, actually tells right out of the Bible about the promised land. And this is what most people at that time probably didn't know, and they still don't know today. The promised land to his people, Israel. So let's see if we can join that little dialogue or monologue and then go right into the closing theme, Ken. Here it comes.
The West that was won by its pioneers, settlers, adventurers is long gone now. Yet it is theirs forever. For they left tracks in history that will never be eroded by wind or rain, never plowed under by tractors, never buried in the compost of events. Out of the hard simplicity of their lives, out of their vitality, their hopes, and their sorrows, grew legends of courage and pride to inspire their children and their children's children. From soil enriched by their blood, out of their fever to explore and build, came lakes where once were burning deserts, came the goods of the earth, mines and wheat fields, orchards and great lumber mills, all the sinews of a growing country. Out of their rude settlements, their trading posts, came cities to rank among the great ones of the world. All the heritage of a people free to dream, free to act, free to mold their own destiny.
Promised land, and God keeps his promises, as we know. Men don't. We don't. That's why we don't make promises to God, because if we make them and we don't keep them, he doesn't like it. So we try not to do that. We just promise that we can't do everything, but we will do something, Lord, and that's it. And, you know, this nation, again, was a nation right out of heaven, built out of heaven. It was a land of the new milk and honey, you know, not the land of terror and the land of desolation and the land of destruction and the land of war and the land of strife. No, land of peace, the land of truth, the land where men could be free to do what? Worship their God. He brought them here for that purpose. Land between two great rivers, the Atlantic and the Pacific, two oceans. And we see that in Isaiah particularly. We see that. Very beautiful, beautiful grasp, if you have that grasp. And I think many of you do, is that this nation is no accident, And this people is no accident. And God doesn't create accidents, you know. And just talking about that recently with others and, you know, friends and some of us who know that God has had his hand on America for a long time. But now things have changed. And they've changed because America does not have that soul that it once had. And it was corrupted, yes, by these new supplanters. And it wasn't just Esau and the children of Rush, but it was more significant than that. It was the children of Cain, the wicked ones, those whom God knew he would hate more than any other group or race of people because of what they would do and what they did in the previous age. That was. And this world was a different world in a different era and a different time. And rather than destroy everything, he only destroyed the age in which the earth had been created. Dinosaurs roamed, the Leviathan roamed the face of the planet. Now we see all these fault lines, we see all of these pockmarks, and then all of the destructive craters acting up now as we near the end of this age. We near judgment. America has changed, her soul, her heart, her being. And so God says he has to bring down judgment. And the judgment he's bringing down is really very beautifully scripted in the book of Deuteronomy. 28, chapter 28, tells the whole story about the blessings and the curses that my people, Israel, true Israel, will experience throughout this whole period of time in this age. And now we're experiencing a lot of curses, and they're going to get worse. We're seeing the end of that now, and we're going to see it culminate in war against the saints of God, against this people, this country, with Rush and China. We're going to see God's enemies, our enemies, who have been cultivated as our friends, going back to Stalin and Lenin, going back to Roosevelt, going to turn against us. That hand now is going to come back to grab us. They're going to bite us right in the bippy. And that has to happen. It has to happen. Ezekiel chapter 38 and 39 tell the story of these two brothers and also the influence that they have by Cain's influence upon them in regard to the Middle East. That's why you see all of the so-called movements for peace now. Peace, peace, when there is no peace, Jeremiah, you know. For when they shall say peace and safety, sudden destruction cometh upon them. This is a fake peace leading to more war and conquest by the evil fig tree that was planted in Jerusalem in 1948. Can't be any clearer than that to me. After the break, when the break comes up, we're going to play this segment, begin this segment, and the influence on the Harrimans and the railroads and the westward expansion. You see, wherever Little Red Riding Hood went, the big bad wolf was sure to follow. Money's the investments. For evil intent, no doubt. But good came out of it, too, you see. So you're going to take the good and the bad. And I think that it dovetails very, very interestingly enough with the last musical clip that I gave you. Those were words that actually were right out of the Bible. So, I think it's coming up on break time now. If that's the case, Ken, just let me know. Wink at me, and and then we'll go to break, and then we'll start that clip, which I want you to be impressed by some of the research that he's done on the red pill, because you need it. You need to take the red pill. I don't mean the Republican pill now. No, I'm talking about wake-up pill. Wake-up time. That is the time of now. Now, my friends. Get ready. It's coming. The rude awakening is here. The elections will not change it. They're a distraction. Don't hope for the court to save us. A new Supreme Court with a 5-4 majority. With Amy Coney Barrett. It's not going to change a whit. The die is cast, my friends. It's way past that time now. But let's look up, not down. Let's not look to the voting booth. Let's look up to the chalice. Let's look up to the skies and see what is coming our way. That's what we need to do more than anything you've heard before. Wake up to that reality, and then you'll get the gig. I know it's not easy. I mean, a lot of you keep saying, oh, well, we got to have some, you know, hope on the earth. And yes, we do. We have the same hope on the earth that we have up above. And he's still the same God. And he's saying that if you come back to me in 2 Chronicles 7:14, that I will heal your land, I will restore your valor, I will restore your blessings that I've taken from you. We're not doing that, though. Quite the contrary. And they think that Donald Trump, many, that he is the new Saul of America. And Saul was a total disaster in the end, as we know. Just reading in the book of 2 Samuel, you know, what David had gone through. Not only Saul working to kill him, but the son, Absalom, also. And he, too, wound up falling on the sword. Not suicide, but he was killed in battle. You see, David was anointed. He was anointed the new king of all Israel. I think it was, 19 years old or something like that? And he became king of all Israel for like 40 years? Judah reunited, Benjamin, and the 10 tribes. That was at that time. And David himself had to suffer because of his sending out into battle to get killed of Uriah the Hittite. And one of the things he did was when David bore his first son, God said that son will die. That baby died. That was God's unhappiness with David. But he still called David a man after my own heart. David was still a chosen vessel. He had a lot of sins, too. Who doesn't? So the next time somebody comes along and says, you're not going to heaven, or this one's not going to heaven, well, you know what? Maybe they're not going to be there, too. Because your job is not to judge their soul. Your job is to make yourself presentable to the Lord. Yourself. Clean up your own act. Cast the beam out of your own eye. Not your neighbor or someone else. Because that's what Satan likes to do, accuse. Satan is the great accuser. He is the person who loves to be able to point the finger. And that's why we have all of these candidates for office and all these groups that pretend to be thought police, freedom-loving, anti-haters are actually the haters. They're the ones that hate freedom. Freedom to criticize them. They're the ones that hate you. They hate you and they hate your race. And they're trying to destroy it. And guess what? They're doing a pretty good job. A damn good job. And that's God's chastisement rod, too. He's using them, the enemy, to do to his people what is called a nice little spanking. He's given us a good spanking. But he's using evil to punish evil, too. So just remember that. This promised land of America was indeed land, milk and honey, a milk where men and women could be what they choose to be. Free of government interference. Free of all kinds of, you know, barbaric experiments. Until Johnny's friends, his little children, came and said, it's time to change all of that. We need a bank. We need a central bank. We need to take over the academics, colleges, universities, and send your children off to war. Does that sound familiar? It sure does. All right, we'll come back, and the video presentation we'll hear very shortly. Rick Adams Uncensored. Facebook, Rick Adams Uncensored as well. I'm right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
After about a month of Extendovite, I don't know what it is about the circulation factor. I was able to increase the weight, increase the amount of sets I could do. It has to do with the oxygen getting to the blood. You should market this as an athletic performance. And I don't change anything about my diet or anything. I just thought, this is amazing. Bilberry extract has got something called resveratrol in it, which is the same stuff that you get from red wine. It's also good for eyesight. And I was reading that the Royal Air Force during World War II would give their pilots bilberry jam so they could have better night vision stuff. This is amazing.
To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store. Or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
And we're back, folks. Rick Adams Uncensored. And I want to tell you that we'll have time for calls in the second hour. Art will also be back today. Art from Philly. A lot going on in Pennsylvania, a lot going on everywhere in Florida, as well as here in my home state of Rhode Island. And all of it is leading up to a global union. My friends, just never forget that. All right, this clip, Take the Red Pill. And it's actually Red Pill InfoWar on BitChute. So let's see if we can join this study that he's done on the influence of the Rothschilds and the Harrimans and so forth here in the United States.
Thank you. In the immediate aftermath of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, the American government came to the conclusion that a lone gunman had changed the course of human history by killing the most powerful man in the world with three rifle shots fired from the elevated window of an office building. And for half a century, they have stuck rigidly to this fabrication, while critics, scientists, playwrights, and poets have produced books and essays and films to prove beyond any shadow of a doubt that this version of our Western history is a physical impossibility. Over and over again, we have been told that this man did it, by himself. He didn't have any help, and he did it because he was a lonely madman and a communist to boot. We are also meant to believe that there is nothing remotely suspicious in his being shot on live television in a basement full of police officers before he had a chance to tell his side of the story. So there is quite clearly no need to investigate further. Of course, every thinking person knows this is absolute nonsense. And being nonsensical, it naturally leads thinking people to ask some very important questions, like, why did the American government come up with such a lame and improbable scenario to account for what had happened? And then why did they stick with it so dogmatically for so many years afterwards? Exactly what and who are they protecting? And how can it be that even such venerable institutions as the BBC have played along with this charade in the intervening decades? We now know that there were actually 8 riflemen firing at the president on that day. We know where they were located in Dealey Plaza, and we know their names. However, those with sharp eyes will already be asking themselves why we were only showing the location of 6 assassins in this schematic. We're doing this because any casual onlooker who happened to be in Dealey Plaza at 12:29 on November 22nd, 1963, might well have caught sight of these 6. Many people did. Witnesses like Arnold Rowland, Richard Randolph Carr, Lee Bowers, Amos Ewens, Mary Moorman, they all gave precise descriptions of men they observed in the windows of the book depository and on the famous grassy knoll. But none of them observed 2 of the riflemen who shot at the president. No one did. And the reason why no one did is itself the key to the mystery. A mystery which begins with a very simple question. Supposing you wanted to shoot at a man on a barren, empty street without anybody seeing you, where could you possibly hide? However, the riflemen who took part in the assassination were not as important to an understanding of what the Kennedy assassination was really all about as were a group of 20 men who had gathered together the night before at the home of Dallas oil millionaire Clint Murchison. These men were a much more important part of the story than the assassins themselves, because they hired the 8 snipers and paid them. We even know how much they paid them. So who were these men? What brought them together to orchestrate such a foul and despicable deed? Why did they, and more importantly, those who came after them, cover up the crime with such ruthless brutality for so long afterwards? And how can it be that these men and what they stood for has left an indelible legacy which still influences our daily lives right up to the present day? To answer these questions, we must inevitably step back into history. And most people will not like this very much, because most people have very little interest in history. This, however, is going to be a history lesson quite unlike anything that anyone has ever heard. It certainly will be nothing like what we are taught in school, and yet it begins with a name which most people have heard but probably won't be able to place, the name of E.H. Harriman. Who was E.H. Harriman?
Dynamite's ready, Butch.
Mr. E.H. Harriman himself, he had the confidence of...
Open the door or that's it!
You think E.H. Harriman would get himself killed for you, Woodcock?
I worked for Mr. E.H. Harriman on the Union Pacific Railroad, and he entrusted me...
I'm sure Americans in particular will be amused to learn that Edward Henry Harriman was actually a real historical figure. This man was one of America's first industrial giants, and like the Rockefellers in oil and the Carnegies in steel, he got his start by borrowing money from the Rothschilds, of whom we'll hear more later, to create a monopoly for his own business, which was railroads. He was the 19th century railroad king. It was a monopoly which wouldn't be allowed today, and it helped in turn to create the Rockefeller oil monopoly. And this gave America's first industrial giants colossal power. These were the first people in human history, we mustn't forget, whose businesses were worth more than most countries. People whose fortunes dwarfed anything that the Caesars or the Tudors or the Medici ever dreamed of. So, being greedy, they used this power to engage in price fixing. Naturally, they formed a cartel. Their attitude was that they could charge whatever they liked for steel and oil and transporting goods on the railways. They knew that all American business was dependent on them, and they'd made sure there was no competition. So they could ignore market forces and charge pretty much whatever they liked. Now, this naturally caused resentment, and it's very interesting that the press at that time started calling these first Illuminati bankers and industrialists robber barons. Of course, once these fortunes began to be made, others naturally tried to get in on the act. One who succeeded was J.P. Morgan, who became a private banker during this period. But modern critics have discovered that far from being the richest man in America everyone thought he was, it turned out upon his death that Morgan actually only owned 17% of Morgan Bank, and that like so many others, he was simply a front for the Rothschilds family. 5 years after E.H. Harriman died and handed on the business to his sons, W. Averill Harriman and E. Rowland Harriman, this new breed of Western business moguls faced their first really big test with the coming of World War I. Once again, we must never forget that this was the first time in human history that a truly global conflict had been fought. It was sure to have long-lasting international repercussions, and many observers at the time had their doubts as to whether Western industrial capitalism, which was still in its infancy, could cope with the demands of war production. In the world economic recession which followed, many feared these fledgling industries might vanish altogether as countries struggled with debt and war reparations. But actually, Western capitalism emerged from World War I in a far stronger state than it was in at the beginning. So how could this be? The First World War taught the new class of international bankers and industrialists a very simple lesson. War is good for business. Take, for instance, Remington. We tend to associate their name with typewriters, but actually, they made most of the rifles and handguns used during the Great War, and made a colossal fortune in the process. The banks, in their turn, lapped this up because it meant that defense contractors were having no trouble repaying the huge loans they had outstanding, and, best of all, the world's richest nations had to borrow huge sums from the merchant bankers in the first place to finance the war, the Americans and the British just as much as the Germans. And they would now be repaying these loans to the banks for decades to come at a steep rate of interest. For international merchant bankers, the Rothschilds in particular, the First World War had been a gift from heaven. And people watching this should ask themselves a simple question before passing judgment. Supposing you were in business during that war and the contract you had with the government to supply the troops with tin hats or boots or uniforms or gunpowder was netting you millions every year in profit. And then one day the war ended, and your money stopped completely. What do you think your attitude to war might be? That war was good for business was not the only lesson the ruling classes learned during this period. The Russian Revolution of 1917 terrified rich people all over the world. Watching Lenin and Trotsky taking over such a vast area of the globe, the kings and queens of Europe's tiny sovereign states in particular became extremely nervous. The question on all their minds was, supposing the communist success in Russia should inspire their own working class to rise in revolt. Many of the crowned heads of Europe, like England's George V, had been related to Tsar Nicholas, and the brutal execution of the Tsar and his family, particularly the bayonetting of his young daughters, sent a shockwave through the upper classes of every nation. Did a similar fate lie in store for the royal families of Holland, Sweden, Spain, and England? This question was lying heavily on the thoughts of the elite when the First World War ended in 1918, and it had the effect of focusing the minds of the new Illuminati bankers and industrialists on the question of what to do for best with a defeated and dilapidated Germany. The population were poor, penniless, and worn out, yet the German economy still contained some of the most sophisticated and expensive industrial stock on the planet. The Illuminati sensed an opportunity. Supposing, as the world's first international businessmen, They could get their hands on Germany's steel mills, her coal mines, her factories, ports, and her shipbuilding industry. Over the years, certain names have become very familiar to those who maintain an interest in the Kennedy assassination. None more so than Alan Dulles, whom Kennedy fired after the Bay of Pigs disaster, and yet later he somehow managed to chair the Warren Commission, which was supposed to be investigating Kennedy's death. Something few people know, however, is that Dulles and his older brother John Foster Dulles wrote the Treaty of Versailles. They were both lawyers of Sullivan and Cromwell, and it was largely they who decided that the German people must pay war reparations totaling 135 billion marks. A mind-boggling sum at that time, which today translates into 250 trillion. When this was announced, the legendary UK economist J. Maynard Keynes maintained it was a ludicrous sum, and he did a swift calculation from which he reasoned that it would take Germany until 1988, 60 years hard labour, to pay it off. But it didn't. So why? Maynard Keynes sensed that the Dulles brothers, backed as they were by the new Illuminati, were trying quite deliberately to sabotage the German economy. And they succeeded. As mass unemployment led to hyperinflation, the famous stories of people papering their walls with worthless Reichsmarks and handing over their life savings for a loaf of bread soon followed. With German investors on their knees, the new Illuminati moved in and began buying up shares of stock in German industry at a knockdown price. Now, why did they do this? The cynical mind would say to make a buck, but it really wasn't that simple. What they wanted was to make Germany strong again so that she would become a bulwark against Soviet communism.
Germany was fighting for its life. Certain measures were needed to protect it from its enemies. I cannot say that I am sorry we applied those measures. We were a bulwark against Bolshevism. We were a pillar of Western culture. A bulwark and a pillar the West may yet wish to retain.
It was around this time that the newspapers, which these same rich people owned, made sure the word Bolshe, a truncation of Bolshevik, entered the English language, so that we would associate Bolshevism with aggression. And it was with these subtle and not-so-subtle methods that the international elite began to shape our destiny for the remainder of the 20th century. The intellectuals of the period were furious. They were incensed, they were depressed, and you get a very good feeling of the political atmosphere of the time from the diaries of the Labour politician Harold Nicholson, when he writes, "We have lost our willpower, since our willpower is divided. The people of the governing class think only of their own fortunes, which means hatred of the Reds. Our class interests cut across our national interests, and I go to bed in gloom." With such heavy investment coming into the country, particularly from America and Britain, Germany began to recover very rapidly. And then the new class of international financiers began searching around for a homegrown, authoritarian political movement they could support. What they needed was someone they could count on to be both aggressive and expansionist. Ultra-right-wing causes, which at normal times would have been ignored and marginalized, were suddenly given very careful consideration. Until finally, the rich elite found a man and an idea which they felt might deliver the political outcome they desired. Adolf Hitler and his fledgling National Socialist Party. At the same time that the world's rich elite began grooming Hitler for his starring role, they also became even more deeply involved in military intelligence. I say even more because the Dulles brothers, Averell Harriman, and the chief of Remington, Samuel Bush, a man referred to as the original Merchant of Death, had a relationship with American military intelligence stretching back into World War I. The lesson here being that the American variant of military intelligence started out with businessmen protecting their investments, just as if they were a mafia. Right from the very beginning, it had nothing to do with national security and everything to do with money. In Hitler, the Illuminati had found a ready-made stooge who could be the face of this autocratic new movement. And when the time came to put together a new secret intelligence service which was going to help protect all the money they had tied up in the German economy, these men also found one was readily available, the Order of the Skull and Bones at Yale University. Discussion of secret societies is something of a minefield because it so easily invites ridicule. It is very difficult for the general public to accept that the super-rich leaders of their Western world can possibly be as mad and deranged as they actually are. The public, generally speaking, are sensible.
Thank you. We'll pause here, boy. I'll tell you. You have you taken the red pill yet? Well, there it is. It's in front of you. Take it. Time for a break. More to come as we continue, and Art will join us as well. Rick Adams, Uncensored, here only on RBN.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen plan to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
Extend your life with Extendovite, a 7-herb combination made from garlic, cayenne, bilberry, hawthorn, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Each herb was chosen for their abilities to help improve irregular heartbeats, chest pain, lower cholesterol, as well as normalize blood pressure and clean and strengthen arteries, plus much, much more. Doctors have taken people off of some or all of their pills just because they believe their patients got better while taking Extendovite. Get the dependability of Extendovite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Can man control his destiny? Can he change the shape of things to come?
Very significant facts here. You know, the Rothschilds behind virtually all of it. The Illuminists, all of them, all tie into the beast. The beast system of this Kenite, Cain seed line, you see, right down to the very end when Jerusalem will be leveled, as Jesus has told us in his word in Matthew 24. It's interesting. Hitler's name came up. And, you know, I have never been one of those. Forgive me if you don't like what I'm going to say. But I have never been one of those who has admired Hitler as true opposition. to the synagogue of Satan, because I began to think about it. I began to study history as well as scripture, and I found out that Hitler had over 150,000 Jewish soldiers, Jewish planners, Jewish policymakers who volunteered in that government of National Socialism, and it's a fact. I have one of the volumes here. One of the authors had written a whole book on it, Hitler's Jewish Soldiers. You can look it up. But in fact, the enemy always finances both sides. The Kenites always do that. They finance both sides of every conflict, and sometimes three sides. So as you know, Hitler played a very vital role in galvanizing the opposition to Germany even more, because Germany would then have to be totally destroyed. But industries in Germany were allowed safe passage. Jewish-owned industries like Farben, I believe it was IG Farben, they were not to bomb any of those targets. So you see, we've been lied to, I believe. We've been lied to right from the beginning. And many of our people fall into that trap. They just don't think. Don't be deceived by Satan and his children, because they are masters of deception like you wouldn't believe. There's no limit to the evil that they will not concoct. We've seen that in these wars in the Middle East, for instance. They make up stories about poor little children being taken off of incubators. Meanwhile, they bomb children in villages. They themselves, the ones that are concerned about children that Saddam Hussein was allegedly taking off of incubators. That's how vile, that's how satanic they really are. See? And I know they're listening. And I know they don't like the truth. The truth hurts them because it's right there in the scriptures, friends. Right there in the word. The enemy is Satan, and he does have his children on the face of the earth. Okay? Sons and daughters of Cain. And they are doing their father's work. Our people are doing their father's work too, many of them, because they're actually in bed with them. They're actually in bed with the enemy, and they don't even know it in many cases. They're praising them, heaping praise upon those who are actually killing our brothers and sisters all over the world. Now they're doing it to us here, the final Bolshevik, Leninist, Stalinist maneuver. You see? So he's not wrong. He's documenting fact and how Hitler rose to power. And you can read Anthony Sutton's marvelous works on, Wall Street and the rise of Hitler, or Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. All of that was their bailiwick. And the average German, of course, had to be killed off because they were the good guys, the German people. But the hierarchy of the Nazi Party were communist Nazis. Both, my friend, they were twin cousins. They were Zionist agents. That's why they were brought here, many of them, after the war. In NASA jobs, CIA jobs, OSS, CIA. Be not deceived, my friend. All right, we'll be back. Hour number two. I may just put aside some of what you heard and do more in the next program, because I have something else, and then art coming up. Rick Adams, Uncensored, hour number two is coming up.
Is your property a financial burden and causing you grief? Have you tried to sell but can't find buyers? Or are you just too busy to sell your property? Don't worry. We have the right solution for you. We buy properties as is, with cash, close in 30 days, and pay all closing costs. Our service is ideal for property owners who are in pre-foreclosure, have high-end repair costs, experiencing financial hardship, going through costly divorces, are relocating, need cash for retirement, suffering family loss, or have tax liens. Whatever your situation may be, we can help you sell your property and get the money you need. If you own a single-family home or multiple family units, call us for a free consultation at 888-910-1037. That's 888-910-1037. Or visit our website at cashingproperty.com. That's cashingproperty.com. Sell your property fast and leave all your worries behind.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.